And we are back. Welcome back to another episode of the Depressed Cincinnati Sports Fan Podcast. It is very depressing to be a Cincinnati Reds fan right now. I am your host, Jesse, on this podcast. We're going to have probably one of the saddest Reds weekly update. But also good news, Joe Burrow is on the field and throwing a football for the first time in months. That was pretty much the only good thing that happened in Cincinnati sports all freaking week. All right, let's talk about the Reds. And like I said, this is probably going to be one of the worst and probably saddest Reds weekly update I have done so far in the season. We're a month into the baseball season and I am pretty much stressed. Pretty much have gray hairs all over my hair. All right, so the Reds took on the Baltimore Orioles last Friday to begin a three-game series at Great American Ballpark. Baltimore's a good team. They won 101 games last year. Yes, they got swept in the divisional round, but it doesn't really matter. They're still a very, very damn good baseball team. And I knew coming into this series that the Reds will have their hands full. And boy, did it ever did. It didn't start off well on Friday night. The Reds lose in shutout fashion, 3-0. The offense only got two hits, and that was all created by Ellie De La Cruz. Hunter Green was on the mound. He pitched 5 2/3 innings, 5 hits, no earned runs, 4 walks, 5 strikeouts, and he threw 109 pitches. On the mound for Baltimore was Chris Sale at his prime. 6 1/3 innings, 2 hits, no earned runs, 0 walks, and 4 strikeouts while only throwing 72 pitches. By the way, Chris Sale was not on the mound for Baltimore. He doesn't even play for Baltimore. I'm just saying that because the Reds made Irwin of Baltimore look like Chris Sale in his prime. So that's why I'm going to be saying all these pitchers that were great back in the past. Every time the Reds are against a left-hander pitcher for any opponent so far this year, they look like Randy Johnson. It's ridiculous. So Irwin had his Chris Sale going on Friday night, and that was pretty much it for that game. It was pretty much a game that started really late. Not late, but it was a 2-hour delay because of rain. And honestly, I wish the game would have just gotten postponed all around. On a Saturday night, Reds lose 2-1. In the ninth inning, the Reds' offense finally got a run. Spencer Steele had an RBI single that scored Jake Fraley. That made it 2-1. And you're thinking to yourself, here we go. Bases loaded, one out, okay? One out. You just need a fucking run. And I'm going to go raw here in this podcast. I don't give a shit. You have one out, bases loaded. You just need one run or hell, win the game with a 2-run single. Anything. Anything. So, one out. In comes CES to the freaking plate. He struck out swinging. I'll talk about CES later. It's not his fault. And then, with two outs, Kenny Lehrer up in the mound, or up in the plate, and he flies out to left. What I really hate about that at-bat by Kenny Lehrer in this game on Saturday night against Baltimore is that he wasn't really, like, he was trying to be the hero. Like, dude, can you please have some plate discipline? Like, please. Like, come on now. The only reason why the Reds were in that position in the bottom of the ninth inning is because they had good eye in the plate. But it didn't happen for CES or Candelario. Baltimore gets out of it. They win the game 2-1 and taking the series and looking for the series sweep on Sunday afternoon. And they did that in necrophilia fashion, 11-1. The Reds offense only had 3 hits. Baltimore got the scoring going in the first inning with 3 runs off the bat. And that was pretty much the game. I didn't even bother to watch that game. On the mound for Baltimore in the, oh yeah, by the way, let's go back to Saturday night. I'm sorry, I forgot to talk about Baltimore's starter in that game. Memes, who looked like Roger Clemens out there. 7 innings pitched, 3 hits allowed, no earned runs, 0 walks, 8 strikeouts, 85 pitches. This was this guy, first start in 2 years. He had Tommy John surgery. This was his first start in 2 years. And the Reds made him look like fucking Roger Clemens. Are you kidding me right now? Are you serious? Now, this guy Memes has thrown a perfect game in his career. Or a no-hitter. Either both. They were talking about that in the broadcast. But still, this guy had Tommy John surgery, and this was his first start in 2 years, and you allow him to go off like that? Unbelievable. And Andrew Abbott, in this game on Saturday night, 5 innings pitch, 7 hits allowed, 2 earned runs, no walks, 8 strikeouts, allowed two solo home runs, and threw 84 pitches. He didn't pitch bad. Like I said, only 2 solo home runs. So the Reds were in the game. But the offense is just really shitty right now. Let's go back to this game on Sunday. Let's move forward to the game on Sunday. Okay? Baltimore had Dean Kramer on the mound. And looking into this matchup on Sunday, I thought the Reds offense could do something against Kramer. Wrong. This guy went 6 innings pitch, 1 hit allowed, no earned runs, 1 walk, 6 strikeouts, threw 93 pitches. This guy looked like Rory Oswalt at his prime with the Houston Astros. Nick Lodolo was due for a not so good start. In this one, 5 innings pitch, 4 hits allowed, 4 earned runs, 2 walks, 6 strikeouts. He's been so great ever since he made his debut. And I think that he's allowed to have a game like this. He wasn't, like, awful. He was just off. So, the Reds get swept by Baltimore. In total, the offense in the 3-game set against Baltimore, 2 runs, 11 hits in the 3 games. Baltimore outscored the Reds 16-2. Let's sit with that for a quick second. Two runs. Oh my gosh. I don't know. I don't know. I really don't know, guys. Like, I know Baltimore's good, but he only scored 2 runs. And the pitchers that they threw out in the 3-game set, they're not terrible, but my gosh. Is that really that bad for the Reds' offense? Is the Reds' offense that bad? It's just unbelievable right now. Okay. Baltimore leaves Cincinnati. In comes the Arizona Diamondbacks for a 3-game set that began on Tuesday night. Before the game, TJ Friedl is back on the club. And everyone thinks, oh, Friedl's back? That means the Reds' offense is going to look like the 1926 Yankees. Wrong. Tuesday night, Reds lose. They fall in the first game of the series to the Arizona Diamondbacks 6-2. Only 3 hits by the offense. So there's improvement. 3 hits. That's a big deal. Zach Gallen was on the mound for the Diamondbacks over here looking like Pedro Martinez in his prime. 6 innings pitch, 1 hit allowed, no earned runs, 3 walks, 6 strikeouts, throwing 79 pitches. Frankie Montes back on the mound after he got a comebacker that hurt his forearm and he had to miss 2 starts. In his return, really good. 6 innings pitch, 4 hits, 1 earned run, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts, throwing 87 pitches. He pitched great, but the offense didn't do shit. Shocker. Friedel in his return in the lineup was 0-for-4. Jonathan India hit a home run, his 50th of his career. I'll give him a standing ovation. Good job, Jonathan. Good job. And then out of the bullpen, Justin Wilson. This guy pitched a half inning, allowed 4 hits, 4 earned runs, while throwing 21 pitches. His season ERA right now is at 8.59. Good Lord. So the Reds fall in game one of the 3-game set to the Diamondbacks on the Wednesday night. Reds lose again, 4-3. Oh my gosh, 9 hits, an offensive explosion, but only 3 hits. The Reds finally took the lead, guys, in the second inning. Stuart Fairchild, RBI single. Oh my God, it's happening. Standing ovation. the Cincinnati Reds lead a baseball game. Oh my gosh. Oh my goodness. Oh my gosh, I'm losing my mind here in the podcast. Hold on a second. My mic. That was a big deal, man. The Reds lead. And it was gone next inning. D-backs get two runs. They take a 2-1 lead. Candelario RBI double ties the game. D-backs scored to make it 3-2. Former Reds, Eugenio Suarez, my guy. Homers off Lucas Sims in the 8th inning. 4-2 Diamondbacks. 9th inning, the Reds try to make it interesting. TJ Friedl, RBI double. The Reds had 2nd and 3rd with 1 out. Will Benson, who has struggled mightily against lefties. Of course, let's just bring him in, right? But the Reds bench is just full of lefties right now. Strikes out, shocker. And then Jonathan India flies out to right to end the game. The Reds lose. That is 7 losses in a row. First time the Reds have lost 7 in a row since 2022. On the Thursday, the series finale, the homestand finale. Can the Reds just win a game? No! They proceeded to get swept. That is 8 in a row. Losing in the series finale to the Diamondbacks, 5-4. 9 hits by the offense again. 2 consecutive games. We're on to something. Hunter Green on the mound. And the Reds are already down right off the bat. Jock Peterson homers off Green. And then Candelario ties the game at 1 with a home run in the 5th inning. Then the Diamondbacks get 2 the next inning. They get another in the 7th. And then the Reds had some offensive explosion in the 7th inning. Elly De La Cruz, RBI single, made it 4-2. And then Spencer Sear, 2-run single that tied the game at 4. What a comeback. Oh my gosh, the Reds could finally win a baseball game. And then the 8th inning, Corbin Carroll, RBI single off Fernando Cruz. Diamondbacks regained the lead, and that was pretty much it. 0-6 homestand. 8-game losing streak. Hunter Green, 5 innings pitch, 4 hits allowed, 3 earned runs, 5 walks. Good Lord. Was that Texas Rangers start just a mirage? I don't know. 6 strikeouts, throwing 84 pitches. Season ERA right now is at 3.38. You're probably telling me, Jesse, is there any hope for the Reds offense? And honestly, I don't know. I really don't know. I know baseball is a marathon, not a sprint. But right now, the Reds is, they're the worst offensive team in baseball. It's that bad. Okay? It's bad. I don't know if there's... Will it get better? I hope it will. The Reds are on an 8-game losing streak. And I'm looking at the National League Central. They're only 5.5 games out. For only being 5.5 games out with an 8-game losing streak... Oh, that's a miracle win, because you look at the rest of the division, I don't know, Reds on a big-ass losing streak. Everyone else is not playing well. So that's kind of a win, kind of. We're not going to look at the wild card standings, because, wait a minute. The Reds are only 2.5 games out. They're 16-21. Okay, 16-21. 0-6 homestand, 8-game losing streak. Now, you have to go on the West Coast for 10 games. 10 games. Starting in San Francisco, late-ass Friday night at 10:15 p.m. Eastern. For here, 7:15 over there. So you get 3 against the Giants, and then you play the Diamondbacks again. This time at Arizona for 3 games. And then you play the Dodgers for 4 games over there next weekend to end the road trip. So, when the Reds come back home to play the Padres on May 21st, I think that's going to tell us a lot where this team is going to be for the rest of the summer. They're 16-21. You have a 10-game road trip coming up on the West Coast. And the Reds, when it comes to West Coast trips, it's hit or miss. Sometimes they come back home after the road trip, 5-5. It's like, woo, that's a win. Other seasons, 2-8, 1-9. But the way this offense is not hitting at all, I could probably hit right now better than the Reds team right now. That's a lie. I am trash at baseball. But no. Is there hope? Is there hope? I don't know, guys. I really can't answer that right now. This team is on an 8-game losing streak. What's my expectations for this road trip coming up? Honestly, just get a win. Just win a game. Win on Friday night. Okay? It would do a lot for the team morale. Because right now, the team morale is probably just... they're trying to stay positive, but deep down, they're like, dude, are we ever going to win a damn game? Ugh, so frustrating. It's a marathon, not a sprint. But this 10-game road trip coming up, it's going to tell a lot. I'm not saying it's a season definer, but it's going to tell if the Reds are going to be competing in the summertime. Now, let's talk about CES. I said I was going to come back to that topic with Christian Encarnacion-Strand, who is going to the IL with a broken wrist. He's expected to be out 4 to 6 weeks. And to replace him on a roster, the Reds sign journeyman first baseman Mike Ford to a major league contract for the whole season. Encarnacion-Strand missed 4 games since being hit on the wrist on April 27th. He came back and played 4 games before going to the injured list. He's only batting 190 this season with 2 home runs, and he struck out 35 times. Okay. Here's where I have a problem with. When he hurt that wrist on April 27th, the Reds were saying, well, that's the... he had a previous injury to his wrist, but they didn't see anything that will be long-term. The Reds' medical staff is terrible. It is beyond terrible. How do you let a man that is obviously hurting put him back out there 4 games later? You should have just put him in the injured list when he got fucking hurt. I want to know who is employed in the Reds medical staff. I know Dr. Timothy Krimchuk is with them. I don't like that guy. And yeah, I don't care if I'm saying that right now on my podcast. I don't. Okay? He stinks. Whoever is in charge of the medical staff, they all stink. Like, how do you guys even have jobs right now as a team medical staff? If I was a player for the Reds team right now, if I was playing baseball and I hurt myself, I am not seeking that medical staff, all right? I'm taking my ass to Bethesda North. Fuck that noise. Like, what is going on? If I was the head staff of that team and CES got hurt and got hit on April 27th, I'm like, dude, we're shutting you down. I'm sorry. But we don't want to further worsen the injury. And sure enough, 4 games later, it got even worse. Like, seriously, right now? Whew. It's not a good time right now to be a Reds fan. It really isn't. And I'm sorry for the cuss words. I really am. But I'm just a guy who is a fan of Cincinnati sports and loves his teams. But when I see stupidity in the clubhouse, especially when it comes to the team's medical staff for this baseball team, I have a problem with it, and I'm going to be really emotional and passionate about it. Someone has to say it. The media is not going to say it, because Cincinnati media, I'm sorry, they're just terrible. They don't ask David Bell the tough questions. They don't ask anybody tough questions. Even Zach Taylor or Wes Miller. Anybody. They don't. Man, you put me in a Cincinnati media, it's a wrap. I'll probably lose my credential on day one. I'm being dead ass right now. Unbelievable. So yeah, I told you guys in the beginning, that was going to be a really, really, really sad Reds weekly update. And I hope next week when I do another Reds weekly update, that I won't be that angry. But this 10-game West Coast trip, I have really bad vibes about it. Offense can't hit. Injuries galore around this ball club right now. They're not giving me any hope. Whew. All right. But let's switch sports in this city and talk about the only positive news that came out of this sports city the whole freaking week. And that is Cincinnati Bengals starting quarterback Joe Burrow back on the field, throwing the football for the first time in months since his injury against the Ravens on Thursday Night Football last season. Oh my gosh, it was so good to see Joe back out there throwing the football. I almost shed a tear. So he talked with the media on either Tuesday or Wednesday. I believe it was Tuesday. Yeah, it was Tuesday. And I got some quotes, and this is what Joe said about the process of healing when it comes to his wrist injury. So he said, "This was a difficult injury," Burrow said. "It's been a tough several months, but physically, it's not the worst injury that I've had. I've been through much tougher things physically, so that's been a positive. I've been able to really lift and continue my off-season program kind of the way that it always has been," end quote. Also, Joe says, "Fortunately, that coincides with the beginning of training camp, start of the season. We'll see where it's at when the time comes. You never know, but right now, we're in a good spot." Joe always says in his pressers, we're in a good spot when it comes to his team, his health, etc. I'm glad that he's feeling confident. He has that look in his eye like, okay, I'm back, MFs, and I'm here to wreak havoc in the league in 2024. Also, one of the media people talked about, has Joe reached out to anyone that has dealt with the same injury? And this is what he said. He says, "The guys that I have talked to more have been offensive linemen, defensive linemen, linebackers that didn't have that wrist mobility and the little intricacies of the wrist movement like I do." Yeah, I think that's pretty much fair to say, because yes, quarterbacks, when throwing the football, you're throwing the motion with your wrist. But I feel like linemen, I think that's where they get their hand injuries or they hurt their wrist. Because, hell, you can get your fucking cleat step on you and it's like, oh, that's pain right there, or anything. Also, this is what I liked from his presser, and he mentioned this, and this is very important. He mentioned on how he'll be very careful and listen to his body. I love this quote. He says, "I'm going to be honest with myself about how my body feels. Maybe a little more cautious than I've been in years past. That's kind of been something that's been on my mind for the last couple of months." I love Joe. I really do. I think that with the calf injury that he sustained last year during training camp on day two, I think that he should have not rushed back to play in the opener against the Browns in Cleveland, because as you saw, he was under 100 yards passing and he wasn't healthy for the first four games of the season. And then he got healthy, he heated up, beating the Niners, beating the Bills, and then unfortunately he got hurt against the Ravens on that Thursday Night Football game. I think Joe's trying to say that I need to put my team first. And I'll say I need to put my health as well up there. So I need to listen to my body. And if I'm not out there 100%, and that's what Jamar Chase was saying to Joe. It's like, if you're not 100%, my guy, it's okay. We got you. That's why the Bengals signed Jake Browning to a contract for 2 years. Jake Browning proved himself last year when Joe was out. And if that wrist injury has any setback before the opener, anything, I think Joe's going to be like, all right, I want to be out there for my team, but also I don't want to further damage my injury, et cetera, et cetera. And that's why you have Jake Browning out there. So that's a really, really, really good mature quote by Joe. I love that. I mean, it's hard because he's a competitor, man. He is in competitive. He wants to be out there. He is just... We just all want Joe Burrow to have a healthy fucking training camp and preseason, healthy season with nothing happening. That's our goal for 2024, but we're going to take it one day at a time. But it's really good to see Joe back out there. In other news, Tyler Boyd, he is now not a Bengal anymore. He's now a Tennessee Titan. He signed to a one-year deal with them this past week. Tyler Boyd, you deserve a standing ovation. Thank you for everything you have done. You have been just the ultimate competitor leader for this franchise and their come up. Here are some Boyd stats that I really love. Ranked sixth in franchise history in receiving yards with 6,000 and fourth in receptions with 513. And 31 touchdowns as well. A very key member in the Bengals revival from being one of the worst teams in the league to almost winning the Super Bowl in 2021. Tyler Boyd, the 8-year player, was one of the four holdovers on last year's roster whom Zach Taylor inherited from Marvin Lewis's staff when he was hired in 2019. Tyler Boyd, much appreciation. A lot of Bengals fans show so much love to TB. I mean, he was there in the beginning with the rebuild, and he was there with the team losing. I remember when Tyler Boyd made the reception in the last game of the season. I believe it was 2019 against the Miami Dolphins. This guy, right, made a reception. I think he had a cramp, and he was crawling to the sideline. If that doesn't tell you a guy that wants to win or just a straight-out competitor. I know the Bengals had to lose that game because if the Bengals would have lost that game, or the Bengals would have won that game against the Dolphins, then I don't think Joe Burrow would be here right now. But anyways, when the image, the video of Tyler Boyd crawling right there, that just told me that this guy loves football and loves this team and just is just a grinder. And we're going to miss him. We're going to miss him. And I know over the last couple of seasons, well, I'll say the last two seasons, we always call Tyler Boyd Mr. Dependable when it comes to catching the football. I know he hasn't been like that over the last two seasons, but throughout his whole 8-year career, man, Mr. Sure-handed. And we're going to miss him. And I think him going to Tennessee is a perfect fit with new head coach and his former offensive coordinator that was with the Bengals, offensive coordinator Brian Callahan, now being the Titans head coach. That's perfect. So having Tyler Boyd there in that locker room to build culture and having Brian Callahan was his offensive coordinator, that's a perfect fit right there. So I hope it works out for TB and Brian Callahan down in Nashville. And the reason why the Bengals they drafted Jermaine Burton, the Alabama receiver, for a reason. So he will get a lot of reps in camp and preseason and most likely during the regular season as well. So I appreciate you, Tyler Boyd. And once again, you deserve another standing ovation. You really do. You really do. All right. That's pretty much it. Oh, the NFL schedule release is on Wednesday, May 15th. So I am looking forward to talking about the Bengals schedule for 2024 on next week's podcast. So that should be fun. I always love when the NFL schedule releases because we get to see who's playing on primetime. the key matchups, the big matchups, et cetera, et cetera. Looking forward to that. Who's playing on Christmas? Who's playing on Black Friday? Who's playing on Thanksgiving Day? Who's playing on New Year's Eve? All that stuff. Bengals, Chiefs, where that game's going to be, prime time, or we're going to get Jim Nance and Tony Romo. We don't know. We don't know. But I look forward to just seeing the NFL schedule release because we are... Football season's going to come by real quick, guys. It really is. We're not that far off. We got to endure the days of summer of baseball. And you know the state with the Reds. I don't have to talk about that because I already talked about that in the first half of the podcast. But football's almost here, guys. Can't wait. All right, guys. That's pretty much it for this podcast. Once again, I appreciate all my listeners and followers on my day zero, all my new followers. I will always shout you guys out after the end of my podcast because I greatly do appreciate you guys. And I just love putting out content. And as much as I love baseball, I am ready for football season. I really am. I think you guys really love football so much. But let's also hope that the Reds turn around. I really want that. That just makes the podcast even more fun to listen when the Reds are doing well. Right now, they're not. But it's a marathon, not a sprint. And I guess good vibes only. Good vibes only. You guys have a great weekend, and I will talk to you guys next week. And hopefully, next week's podcast is not me yelling and cussing. And I apologize for that. I know this is a family-friendly podcast. I know kids are listening to this podcast. So to all the kids out there, I am sorry for cussing. Fuck. See you guys next week. Bye.